Thank you, Eddie, for this kind introduction. Good morning, everyone. We had it yesterday already, line arrays and electronic beam steering, and I want to focus on line arrays for touring sound or for concert sound, and maybe the title is a little bit misleading. What I want to show you is, that people who do sound field synthesis, that's kind of a very related topic, do a lot of research output, and how they do evaluate their sound fields. And what I mean with optimization is a little bit different maybe for what Bob yesterday told us. So in my terms, I'm really considering the mathematical treatment, so it's an optimization algorithm. So first, we should reconsider that we have basically three different trends at the moment for touring sound line source array applications. The first one is where we came from the paradigm shift in the early 90s. That's the curved line source arrays with rather large waveguides invented by L-Acoustics, and then the other companies came up with their own solutions. And for example, you have the Meyer Sound stuff, which Bob uses a lot of, and of course L-Acoustics and a lot of other companies. And the idea is that you produce homogeneous sound fields by curving the array and do intensity shading and have kind of different filters for band zoning in it, and L-Acoustic calls it array morphing. But what you can't basically do is electronic beam steering, because you have large waveguides in the high frequency section, and as Evert Start yesterday mentioned already, that's not a good idea to do beamforming with those arrays, although people try to do this. So the next step was, was kind of 5 years ago when Martin Audio started to bring in first beam steering applications into the field with their MLA line source arrays, and they have this unique software programmed with MATLAB, so Martin Audio display software. And of course, Duran Audio started kind of 2000s, I think, their own line array called Axis, and there was the first approaches which we had listened to yesterday, the DDS and the DDC algorithms already implemented in the 2000s by Evert Start. And of course, there's a company in Germany, they programmed the East Focus and have an FIR maker tool in it. So the idea is you still have to curve those arrays, but you can apply electronic beamforming on that. And 2 years ago, that was already mentioned by David Sherman yesterday, EAW came up with a straight line source array, and they have a very, very tiny space between the high frequency drivers, so they have 1-inch sized drivers in the high frequency section. So they don't curve the array anymore, and they only rely on the electronic beamforming. And yeah, we thought, or because I mainly come from the sound field synthesis research, we thought that there are obvious links between different research topics, and we thought that we have kind of a little bit more detailed look into what can we learn from them and what can we get from them. So we started to have this very well-known complex directivity point source model. Evert Start mentioned it yesterday already. So what we do is we have a monopole acoustical transfer function, but this monopole has a directivity involved. And for when I take I sources, or the I is the index for my source, and I want to produce a sound field at point M, then I use the sources, and each source gets an FIR filter, or even an IIR, I don't care about it. And this is the synthesis equation for the discrete space. And you can write this in a different way. So that's basically matrix algebra. And what people try to do is that they want to solve for the FIR filter, so basically for the particle velocity of your array. And then different approaches can be or are known. And I want to just to demonstrate the least squares optimization. It's also well known as pressure matching, and it's very like or very equivalent to the DS, which we had yesterday. So what you do is you have your matrix, the acoustical transfer function matrix, where all the sources are included. Then you have your driving function. I call it driving function, but basically that's the FIR filters. And you minimize this as an arrow for a desired sound field. And with kind of some constraints, I use energy constraint on the loudspeakers. And of course, this equation or this approach is one of very, very many approaches. So we should learn things from people who do active noise control or personal audio or multi-zone sound field synthesis, like in automotive. There's a lot of going on at the moment. And already Thompson for Martin Audio worked on constrained nonlinear multivariable function optimization or even goal attainment problem optimization. And there are still people who try to solve the problem as a near field or far field beamforming. So that's kind of the DDC-like. So in order to have it a little bit, or that we can have a very easy model just to get an idea what the algorithm can do, we use a very easy model. So we model the low frequency and the mid frequency range with circular pistons of maybe typical used sizes, and we use for the high frequency section 10 very small waveguides, which I call line pistons, and then they have a very small dimension of 1.2 inch. And that basically, or that kind of matches the EAW ARNIA system approach. So in total, one of our cabinets is 0.37 meter, and we apply just ideal crossovers at 401.5 kilohertz. We have a vertical plane of our venue, which we have chosen. We have kind of arranged some splaying angles, and we have this region which we want to cover, the black one, and the ceiling and some other parts of the vertical slice are a void zone, so we don't want to have large sound pressure levels there. Then you can apply this optimization algorithm, so that's an inverse solution. You look for the FIR filter, and what then software typically does is to give you the sound field or the distribution or whatever in different domains, and I want just to show you some examples what softwares do. Not all softwares do everything, so you have to rely on what tool you do. You use. And for example, this is just the very common slices for different single frequencies. I just did not average. I just use single frequencies. And you see up to 5 kilohertz, the sound field which we want to create is kind of very good radiation characteristics. And it seems that the algorithm does not provide a good solution for frequency at 10 kilohertz or 16 kilohertz. We can get back to this in a moment. So obviously we have an aliasing problem, and the algorithm can't produce good sound reinforcement there. But you see that, and that's one of the key messages I have. You see, when your array has the ability of producing a very homogeneous pressure in front of the array, so in the near field, then it also can translate this into the room. So you don't have any gaps, even at 5 kHz, and you would observe gaps if you would use traditional line source arrays. So that's because you have very small, tiny, high-frequency drivers. So another common visualization came up with the display software from Martin Audio and also the East Focus, at least the papers have this included. So you have a position index plot, and that means that you draw your frequency responses over each of those receiver points. So we start here at 1, so that's the very lowest, and go up here to 30,000. So you see the plane or the receiving points are very highly discretized. And what you see is that the frequency response up to this point where spatial aliasing occurs is very homogeneous, and it decays in the level which we want, which we intended. And yeah, of course, you see here a lot of energy, which is probably shooting here into the top of the hall. And of course, in this region, you will end up with a frequency response which is not homogeneous anymore. And this is also seen if you just plot all the frequency responses in one magnitude plot with different colors. And I think you can't see it very good, but you would recognize it in the paper, you can see it, that at the low frequencies, you get a problem because the array is still too short to be suitable for electronic beam steering. So that's one of the problems, too short arrays. We had it yesterday. And the other problem is above the aliasing frequency, we end up with a lot of different grating lobes, and that distorts my frequency response. So obviously, this approach is not well suited for optimization above this frequency, and you should consider the traditional uniformly driven array. What also is interesting and mostly not given in the software, but I like the way to look at it when you see the when you look at the far field radiation pattern. Of course, this is only valid in the far field of the array, but what you might see there is of course, the same like we have here, those grating lobes. And then you get an impression that those grating lobes, of course, shoot into the top of the hall, and that's definitely not what you want to have. But what you also see is that you have a very reduced level at radiation angles where you don't want to have energy, and that's basically at angles above 0 degrees, so kind of in this region for those frequencies. And also, okay, and also we want to have an avoid zone, kind of in the near of the stage. You see that its algorithm works very well in this range above the aliasing frequencies. It's also not working very well. So people from sound field synthesis came up with different technical quality measures. And of course, you can evaluate the error of your sound field. So what you do is you calculate the sound field, what you get when you applied these FIR filters, and relate it to the desired sound field. And then you can plot it over the frequency. So there's all included. All these points are included. And then you see, of course, almost the same stuff which I told you yet already. We have in the low frequencies the problem that the array is not very well suited for electronic beamforming. And then there's this immediate high rise of the error just there where the aliasing frequency is, and then it increases. And also you can have a relative error where you apply the error related to that what you want to have, the desired sound field. And then you see that's also over the positions of the evaluation points. We have a very large region, basically, in the audience where we have a very small error, which is good, because that's what we want to have. But we also have regions where it's not working, and it pretty much tells us the same story, too short array, and very high aliasing artifacts, and that's basically energy what we don't to have. And then there's another technical quality measure which we might use, which also comes from a sound field synthesis community. That's the acoustic contrast. So they define a bright and a dark zone. That's what we where we have it as a audience region and an a void zone or a non-audience region, and then they relate the sound pressures, the accumulated sound pressures, and then you have a measure over the frequency what's going on. You can even apply a distance compensation, because not all points are in the same distance. So if you apply this, then you end up exactly in that amount what we wanted to have. So we wanted to have kind of 15 dB difference between the audience and that where we don't want to have energy. And that also holds, of course, only for this range where the array is very well, where you can use it for electronic beam steering. For the low frequencies, it deviates, and of course for the aliasing. And also you can do a distribution measure if you take the quantiles of it, like 5%, 25%, the median with 50% and the upper quantiles, and plot the related variable over it. And then in this plot you really see it very good that we have a range kind of 500 hertz to 4 kilohertz, where we almost exactly get what we want to have in terms of our sound field. And that we have these typical problems in the low frequencies where the distribution increases. So we have a little bit more values which are much more than 5 dB plus minus, and of course in this aliasing region there's a lot of errors going on. Just let me show you shortly, because all software omits this, basically what the FIR filters look like. So we have done it over the frequency for the different frequency bands, and that's basically the sources. So source one is the most top loudspeaker, and 16 is the most bottom. And of course, in the high frequency section, we have more sources, more pistons, so 160. And that's the magnitude. And you see here, this algorithm tries to produce something which looks like kind of an uniformly driven array, and it uses only very, very very few drivers in the middle of the array just to produce energy. But of course, that's not what we actually want to have. When we have all those sources, then they should play. And that's basically the group delay. So you see, it's kind of still usable for life reinforcement. We have kind of in the mid frequencies up to 28 milliseconds of delay, which might be still okay. So in conclusion, what I showed you is the most simple least squares optimization approach, which is very often used in sound field synthesis. And the question is if we can use this for our approach of sound reinforcement. The question is if there is an optimization algorithm which works above the spatial aliasing frequency. And of course, all those technical errors can us give hints for further optimization algorithm requirements, or for the R&D, or even for the customer. So I would like to have it in software, kind of those error measures. And of course, the idea of Martin Audio and EAW is, I like it, use smaller waveguides, use smaller pistons, and then you shift the spatial aliasing problem to even higher frequencies. And there's a lot of to be done in terms of what is the perception of those sound fields. So in sound field synthesis, we have a lot of done in it, but what is really needed in terms of perception when we do live sound? So that's the questions here. Thank you for listening.